ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The Pilbara's Burrup Peninsula is a place of contrasts. The red, brown and burnt orange hues of the iron-rich landscape sit starkly in the clear, bright Pilbara sun against turquoise waters and bright blue skies. This ancient landscape also sits in contrast to giant industrial developments like the North West Shelf gas project. Today, Federal Environment Minister Murray Watt approved the extension of operations for the North West Shelf through to 2070.
The Albanese government, as I say, is committed to protecting the environment and First Nations cultural heritage and protecting jobs. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
The company involved, Woodside, and business groups have welcomed the decision, but environmental groups say it's a disaster for the environment and heritage. We'll have more on that story shortly. And the careful science of helping critically endangered species fall in love.
We put a female and a male rock rat in separate enclosures but quite close to each other, and then slowly introduce the scent of each other to them and then the sight of each other.
I'm Alex Barwick and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Urrindah Country in Mbantua, Alice Springs. Woodside's North West Shelf gas project has received final approval from the federal government, extending its potential operating life to 2070. Environment Minister Murray Watt has placed 48 additional conditions on the project aimed at protecting nearby ancient Indigenous rock art. These include reducing certain gas emissions by 2030 and reaching net zero emissions by 2050. The announcement comes almost 4 months after the minister provided Woodside 10 days to respond to his provisional approval for the extension. Reporter Charlie Mills is in Karratha. Thanks so much for speaking to Australia Wide, Charlie. What conditions has Murray Watt announced as part of the approval of Woodside's Northwest Shelf extension?
Well, as you mentioned there, it's 48 additional restrictions, which is designed to avoid and mitigate significant impacts to rock art. Now, that is in addition to a series of restrictions that have already been placed by the WA government. The actual letter of those conditions are going to become more clear as the Environment Department publishes more information about them. But as you mentioned there, it will require a reduction in emissions, specifically for gases that have been discussed in their role in impacting rock art. That includes nitrous oxide and sulphur oxide. Here is Minister Watt speaking a little bit earlier about those conditions.
The conditions will ensure that this project will be operated in a way that does not cause unacceptable impacts to the Murujuga rock art, including by restricting air emissions. Specifically, I've imposed conditions that will require a reduction in certain gas emissions below their current levels, in some cases by 60% below their current levels by 2030, with ongoing reductions beyond that. The conditions will also allow for any new science achieved through the Murujuga Rock Art Monitoring Program to be accounted for by requiring the approval holder to comply with any air quality objectives and standards that are derived by that monitoring program.
That's the Federal Environment Minister Murray Watt speaking there. Charlie, separately, Murujuga traditional custodian Raylene Cooper filed in the federal court to force the Environment Minister to consider her 2022 heritage application for an area near the North West Shelf gas project. What consideration has been made of that heritage application?
So that was a major part, the second part of Minister Watt's announcement today. He's announced a partial declaration to protect a significant Aboriginal cultural heritage site. That comes under the Federal Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Heritage Protection Act, which applies when a heritage site faces injury or desecration. That declaration means additional legal protections have been placed over part of the area in order to assure that the ancient rock art on Murujuga is appropriately adequately protected into the future. Those conditions, he says, again, in order to protect the rock art of the region. Now, essentially, this will legislate some things that are already happening, requiring by law these companies to hold themselves to account to existing cultural heritage management plans that they've worked out with traditional owners. They'll have to continue to consult with them and also take on the advice of a scientific monitoring on the impact of emissions of rock art. Let's take a listen to what he said on this heritage matter.
I've made a partial declaration to protect a significant Aboriginal heritage site at Murujuga. Such a site can be protected under the Federal Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Heritage Protection Act if it faces a threat of injury or desecration. The declaration will mean additional legal protections are placed over part of the area to ensure that Murujuga's ancient rock art is appropriately protected into the future. Importantly, this decision does not stop industry from operating in the vicinity of Murujuga.
Charlie, I imagine there's been wide-ranging reactions to this. What have we heard so far following Murray Watt's announcement?
Well, we heard almost immediately from Woodside themselves. They, of course, have welcomed the Australian government's decision to grant this approval and that there is a level of confidence that they will be able to meet those restrictions placed by the federal government. And they've also, again, shared their view on how important this project is to the Australian economy in terms of royalties and its jobs that it contributes here in the Pilbara region. There is also a bit of support here in the region. We heard a little bit earlier from the Chamber of Commerce head here in Karratha, Sarah Whelan, who welcomed the decision and said that the long wait in between that initial approval and the final approval, as well as the long wait that we've had in this whole process, would have impacted investment, but now this is going to bring a lot more stability to the region. We've also heard from the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation today, also welcoming that decision. In the past, we've heard the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation continuing that line that industry and heritage sites can coexist together. Of course, though, there is a lot of criticism for this project amongst traditional owners and environmental groups, as well as foreign countries. Many voices against those. It comes just a day after the Vanuatu climate minister warned Prime Minister Anthony Albanese the gas project could violate Australia's international climate change obligations. Meanwhile, today, the federal Greens have called the North West Shelf facilities a climate change disaster. Here's Greens Senator Larissa Waters.
Gas companies get to negotiate on what their environmental conditions are going to be. It's an absolute farce. But what is clear is that this gas project is an absolute stinker. It would be a climate disaster and it will wreck 60,000-year-old First Nations rock art. So Minister Watt, wrong way, go back. The only way to protect this rock art is to not have approved Woodside's Northwest Shelf gas project in the first place. And this haggling over conditions just shows who's really in charge and who the Labor government is working for, the coal and gas corporations, not the community, not First Nations people, and certainly not the planet.
Larissa Waters, leader of the Greens, speaking there. Charlie, thanks so much.
Thanks, Alex.
Charlie Mills there, reporting from Karratha.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
The Northern Territory is increasingly, it seems, the place to host other nations' troops. That's certainly been the case for US troops. Since 2011, US troops have rotated through the NT. It's a key aspect of the Australia-US Defence Alliance and includes now joint training exercises with the Australian Defence Force. Now, the Territory's Chief Minister, Leah Finocchiaro, has made her first overseas trip to Japan to spruik the NT as a future home for Japanese troop rotations. Darwin-based reporter Matt Garrick has the story. Matt, good to talk to you. This trip is not a surprise, we should point out. It follows an announcement made last year. Remind us what was said.
Last year, there was quite a historic trilateral meeting between the US, Australia and Japan up here in the Northern Territory in Darwin, where there was an announcement made that Japanese self-defence forces would begin rotating through Northern Australia, essentially with the idea that they would coincide with annual rotations of the US Marines. Now, the US Marines, they're pretty well settled in. They've been coming to the top end since, as you mentioned, 2011, when that was announced by President Barack Obama. Then, that's now well established, and now there's this bid to get the Japanese troops here as well.
So what exactly is the Chief Minister pitching to the Japanese?
Well, the Japanese haven't so far come to Darwin. There was a big war games exercise earlier this year in Queensland called Exercise Talisman Sabre, which saw hundreds of these Japanese self-defence force soldiers go to Townsville in North Queensland. Now, she wants to make sure that the Northern Territory gets a piece of this pie as well, and trying to sell the NT as really the place to go for overseas forces. She's talking about the state of the training facilities, the targets, all these things that the forces want. Of course, they've got that that closeness to Asia and this strategic vantage point, but also she wants them to know that the facilities are here, and she's met with some very senior officials over there to try and spruik that potential.
Is this all around boosting the Northern Territory's economy?
Absolutely. The Northern Territory government consistently talks about its year of action, and it came in last year into power with the idea that it was going to get the NT's relatively stagnant economy moving again. So there is this idea that getting more boots on the ground, getting more troops involved in, you know, the defence sector here is going to get infrastructure built, is going to get accommodation, is going to help drive that economy forward.
And so what's been the result of Leah Fenocchiaro's trip to Japan?
Yeah, so what we've heard so far is she has met with some senior defence officials. She's met with one of Japan's most senior ministers involved in defence. She's met the chief of staff for Japan's Air Self-Defence Force, where she's, you know, she's spruiked the NT's strategic role in regional security. She's talked on discussions about a joint F-35 training exercise to be conducted in Australia next year. Essentially, she's just gone out there and raised the Northern Territory's voice and platform in this relatively big foreign climate of the Japanese Self-Defence Force.
This feels like more of a federal government arrangement. Is there a precedent for a chief minister going over to try and broker troop rotations?
Well, it certainly is a very much a federal government initiative. The chief minister's vantage point or viewpoint in this has essentially been that the Canberra alone can't speak for the Northern Territory. She says that it's important for the territory government to make the case directly. Whether that will bear fruit and whether that's really needed is really yet to be seen. But obviously, she wants to make this diplomatic emergence to kind of get out there and show that the territory is there and welcoming and willing to take on these troops. Whether that actually yields fruit, yet to be seen.
There's been a real scaling up back in, you know, 2011, 2012. We were talking just a couple of hundred troops from the United States coming through. Now we're talking thousands. What does it mean for the territory more broadly to see a significant increase in the number of troops coming through?
Well, absolutely. I mean, purely from a visual point of view, you really see a lot of this military build-up in action now. You can look at the skyline and you often see military aircraft going through the air. You can look at the highways. There's a lot of military vehicles. I mean, you know, you have Defence Minister Richard Marles, who so often refers to Darwin as a garrison town. There's really an increased push to make that true and to make this a more and more of a military place.
And is there any pushback from within the community to this idea that, you know, Darwin has become a garrison town?
Yes, there has always been pushback to that idea and to the over-militarisation of Darwin and the Northern Territory to avoid that happening. But, you know, then you have a federal government and a Northern Territory government in lockstep against those groups. You know, there are activist groups out there and advocacy groups who don't want to see that happen to such an extent. But when you have the governments in such a lockstep pushing for a bolstered military presence in Northern Australia, well, there's not much that they can do at this stage, and there's certainly encouragement from a lot of those very senior sectors for this to be happening. So I think at least for the next few years, you're going to see this build-up continue and continue.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you.
Darwin-based reporter Matt Garrick there. My name's Alex Barwick. You're listening to Australia Wide, bringing you stories from across regional and remote parts of the country. One of Australia's rarest mammals has just found a new home in Alice Springs, allowing visitors and locals to see an elusive creature. It's the central rock rat, and it's good news for this critically endangered creature. Numbers are slowly growing, and now a male and female are living at the popular desert park. And the hope is they'll find love and make more little rock rats. Will Regan has the story.
The nocturnal central rock rat was once thought to be extinct. The yellow-brown furred native with its stout build and largish ears hadn't been spotted for almost four decades. Until in 1996, two were rediscovered in traps during a biological survey in the Turitja West McDonald Ranges National Park in central Australia. They're what's called a boom or bust species.
During times of drought in central Australia, their populations will restrict quite small, and they'll just kind of, a very small amount of those rock rats will be able to survive with limited food resources and water. And then during times of booms, so big rain events and stuff like that, the vegetation will grow up. Obviously, that means there's a whole lot more food for them, means they get all excited and full of food and ready to roll, and they breed up like crazy.
Bronte Stray is the operations manager of zoology at the Alice Springs Desert Park. A recent breeding program has relocated 41 pups to New Haven Wildlife Sanctuary. And now, for the first time ever, visitors to Alice Springs can actually see them at the desert park. A pair of rock rats have been built a specially designed home, and they're still settling in.
Rodents are notoriously quite territorial, so you need to be careful about aggression and stuff like that. So essentially the process is we put two, a female and a male rock rat in separate enclosures but quite close to each other, and then slowly introduce the scent of each other to them and then the sight of each other. And then once that's been happening for a couple of weeks, we'll then introduce them, give them access to each other. And there's a keeper quite nervously waiting to see if they enjoy the presence of each other or see if the female, it's usually the female, as it should be, tells the male to that she's not interested or that she is interested.
Despite losing 95% of their pre-European distribution across the central desert, recent rains have seen their numbers increase. Miss Stray says conservation efforts are also helping keep these elusive mammals around.
Their boom cycle that they recently had in 2020 to 21, I don't think they got very close to extinction at all. So there's a huge amount of work being done by Parks and Wildlife, looking into cat control and feral animal control. A lot of effort was put into, when they were booming, was put into genetic work and sussing out how healthy they were genetically. We've done quite a bit of work trying to figure out how to breed them in captivity. And excitingly, we have had a reasonable amount of success.
As the couple warm to their new home, the Desert Park crew are hoping their natural curiosity will bring them together.
They're adorable. You can see their furry little noses being all intrigued and interested. But yeah, just such a fascinating species and how unique they are and how important they are to the environment as well.
While there is hope their population will increase, for now, the central rock rat remains on the critically endangered list.
Will Regan reporting from Alice Springs there.
ABC Australia Wide.
The person who doesn't support a cull, they've probably been here 10 years, whereas someone who's been here for 40 will actually tell you the population of saltwater crocs we have in our river are ridiculous.
On ABC Radio.
Now from the central Australian desert to the coastal city of Tweed Heads on the New South Wales north coast. In fact, we're going to go kilometres offshore and dive down hundreds of metres below the water with a local named Nikki Watt. Nikki dives carrying a spear gun. It's not something too many are up for, but the keen spearfisher has officially notched a world record after spearing a whopping 162.5 kilo marlin earlier this year. It comes after a cancer diagnosis where she thought she might never dive again, as Mike Commode reports.
In the world of spearfishing, where you take a breath and dive underwater to shoot a fish with a spear gun. Targeting billfish, like marlin, sits at the extreme end. They're some of the biggest, fastest fish in the world.
It can be really intimidating. I think the biggest risk is not understanding the sheer power of them. You could quite easily be dragged down hundreds of metres very, very quickly, and you're never going to make it back up.
36-year-old Nikki Watt from Tweed Heads is one of the few people in the country game to do it.
It's so amazing. It almost overshadows all of the fear. Yeah, to see a fish, especially a striped marlin, lit up hunting, you can never, ever experience anything like it. It's almost like they have a light, like their stripes are so electric neon. They're just such an amazing fish. It's just such an incredible experience.
Nikki holds the world record for the largest black marlin shot by a woman, and she's done it again. From a trip to Eden in New South Wales in April, she now holds the record for the largest striped marlin speared in Australia, and at a whopping 162.5 kilos, the biggest in the world, speared by a woman. The feat came after years of attempts, and just months after a surprise diagnosis had her thinking her diving days were done.
It was actually 2 weeks before our wedding in October that I found a lump on my left breast, and I really didn't have the capacity to get it checked until after the wedding. So literally the Wednesday after it, I booked in and started the process. I found out that I had lobular invasive carcinoma on my left breast.
Nikki would undergo a mastectomy the very next day, removing her breast.
I just, for a few weeks, just every morning woke up in disbelief and was still questioning whether or not it was real. There's just so many questions surrounding what if, you know, am I even going to survive beyond a couple of years, let alone do anything? I never expected to dive again.
But mercifully, the cancer's progression was deemed low risk and her chemotherapy was stopped. Meanwhile, a rehab therapist helped her train to load a spear gun again. It was 3 months later, while on holiday in Eden with daughter Blair and Nikki's husband Bryson, on her first dive since the cancer, that Nikki would come face to face with the marlin she'd long been chasing.
It sort of turned broadside to me to have a look at what I was and what I was doing, because they don't see people very often, obviously.
Taking her shot, it wasn't until the fish was at the surface that she realised just how big it actually was.
Oh,
yes! Yeah!
When we finally got it on the gantry and it came in at 162.5, we all just looked at each other and couldn't believe it. I started crying.
Oh my god!
It was wild. I'm still in disbelief. I still can't believe that fish was that heavy.
Nikki, you've done it. You've done it.
They'd share some of the fish with people back at the boat ramp and took the rest back home with them to share with friends and family over many, many meals. And no, it's not every day a suitcase full of marlin fillets passes through Gold Coast Airport security. Now, still clear of cancer, Nikki's back spearfishing when she can. She plans to join Bryson in Brazil at the end of the year as he represents Australia in the Spearfishing World Championships. The former Australian spearfishing champion is in awe of what his wife's accomplished.
It pushes the boundaries of what's possible. Like to a fish like that breaks the open Australian record by 22 kilos. So, yeah, it just goes to show on what is possible on spear. So, yeah, it was an exceptional catch.
The experience has given Nikki a new perspective on the importance of having a crack at big goals, however seemingly unattainable. And while she's in no rush to spear a marlin again, it's inspired her to keep hunting for the next special fish.
You know, there's so many things that don't seem possible or people have been trying to do for a long time, and I'm sort of starting to think about those things more. Yeah, so I don't know, anything's possible from here on out.
Spearfisher Nikki Watt speaking with Mike Commode.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
And finally, we return to the Central Desert. The iconic Bushbands Bash will celebrate 21 years this Sunday at the Telegraph Station on the edge of Alice Springs and Buntua. More than a concert, it showcases remote Indigenous musicians as they share culture and stories. The bands have spent the week out bush east of town developing their skills and knowledge so they can navigate and thrive in the music industry. Reporter Victoria Ellis went out to meet some of the bands.
That's the music from the red sands of the APY lands. The band is called Ilkari Maru, and here's one of the guys in the band.
I'm Liam Tunganen. I'm from a place called Amara in Central Australia. My band is a family band. It's my father's band. It's called Ilkari Maru. They're from the 80s.
What instrument did he play?
He was a lead singer, guitarist, and...
How long ago did he pass away?
Maybe 14 years ago, yeah.
And you say you want to continue his legacy. What is his legacy? What did he stand for?
He stand with the music. So all the songs is about all his message for all the Aboriginal people in Central Australia, South Australia, Northern Territory, and Western Australia. Yeah.
What sort of things did he sing about?
He sing about the land and the country. And also he sing about, it's called Maralinga Bomb. Yeah.
The Maralinga bombs that Liam's father sang about were the first nuclear weapons tests by the British on Australian soil. With the agreement of the Australian government, Britain tested the atomic weapons at three sites from 1952 to 1963, mostly at Maralinga. Australian authorities did not discover the extent of the contamination at Maralinga until 1984, just before the land was to be returned to its Aboriginal owners. Your dad, through his songs, was really storytelling and history-telling about what happened. What do you think the power of song is to keep history going and tell people about what happened in the past?
Yeah, it's all of them songs is about a message for all the Aboriginal people to understand what happened. So I'm so happy to stepping to the light and looking for the next level. So I'm so glad to play one of my dad's songs. Looking forward.
On the other side of the campground, a very different sort of music is being made. Tonino Torres makes up her own one-woman band called
Matalja, and that's the name that was given to me at birth from my mother as my Indigenous name. It's also the name of my ancestor. In our family, we pass our ancestral names down into our children so that we can keep following that tradition and keep our ancestors close with us and, you know, guiding us and giving us strength throughout this life.
Matalja is from Broome.
I grew up in two worlds. I kind of learned how to switch lanes and to get a really high Western education so I can understand how that world functions. But also, since I was born, we've been growing up in bush and in town and in bush and in town. We go and stay out bush for weeks on end with no electricity or anything, and we develop our land.
Tornino is the first woman to come through the Bushbands mainstream development program, rather than the Divas program, which is specifically for women.
I feel humbled by it. I just thought, okay, there would be other women, you know.
Well, there amazing. Will be after you. There'll be other women after you.
Yeah, I hope so. And put on to any woman that's going to apply, you know, sister girls, you go, you do it. Don't let anything hold you back. You believe in you.
And behind the scenes, rounding up the 10 bush bands at the camp, is Bush Bands Program Coordinator Zoe Curran.
It's not just a concert. It's technically a music development program. It's to help bands navigate the complex music industry, because it is really complex, and we're dealing with some of the most remote artists in the world. And it's, yeah, bringing them here and helping them understand what the music industry is about, and providing them with tools to navigate that.
But whether or not they make it to the big time, these bush rock stars will keep on rocking.
Victoria Ellis reporting there from the East Macdonald Ranges in Central Australia. And that's Australia Wide for this week. My name's Alex Barwick. A huge thanks to the program's producer, Alex Hyman, and for your company. Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for ABC Australia Wide. Have a lovely weekend.
ABC Listen.